All right. Well, Tom, thank you so much for calling into the podcast, man. I have been a big fan of yours for quite some time, and you're a very busy guy.
Very busy. You're right.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of jobs. Like right now, you're coming to Detroit. You're going to be at the Majestic Theater on Friday, the 1st of November. And I mean, who are we kidding? Just looking at your resume, you're a stand-up comic, actor, author, radio host, podcaster. I got to know, with all the project that you're currently into right now, does stand-up remains your first love?
Yeah, stand-up is definitely, I think, the most fun. You know, you can be in a room with people, and it's alive, and it's exciting, and it's always different. All the other stuff is great, and I love doing the radio, I love acting and doing all that stuff, but it's really just so more people start to know that who I am and what a good stand-up I am, and show up at the shows.
Also, when you talk about who you are lately, I know this is going to come up, so I just want to pull the scab off right now. Like, bread baking. Like, I watch Baked, and me and my wife, we sit down and we watch Baked, especially since you hit a few spots in Detroit. Some things we knew, sometimes some things you opened our eyes to, mainly because, you know, you're around it so much, you kind of forget it's there, you kind of drive past it. Where did it start? Where did your love for baking start?
I just really just got kind of hooked into it when a friend of mine, we were writing on the show called Red Oaks on Amazon, and my buddy was telling me that he bakes bread, and he went through the whole process of it, how you have the sourdough starter, and it sounded like science fiction, like you have flour and water in a bowl, and yeast that's floating in the air and stuff goes into it and eats it and becomes alive. And I was telling my family this story, and my daughter for Christmas started a sourdough starter for me. And I always say that was like the best acting I've ever done was on Christmas morning, pretending that a bowl of goo was actually a good present. But it ended up being an amazing present because I started doing it and I just got really good at it. And I just kept spreading the word. I didn't even know that that's how bread was made, you know, like this organic way of making it. And I just started spreading the word and talked on some podcasts, and the Food Network heard that when I travel around as a comedian and visit all these bakeries, they decided, well, let's make it into a show. And we have one season, and I'm trying to see if I can get the next season going. They're going to run it on the Cooking Channel tomorrow night, actually, and next week, so we're starting to poke around again, so I'm hoping to make some more. But I have to say, and I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to you, Detroit was hands down my favorite episode.
Yeah, I gotta know, like, you're coming here for your stand-up gig on the 1st of November. I gotta know, are you going to try to find new places, or are you just going to revisit some of the places that you did in that episode?
I'm not doing Baked when I come out to see you.
Yeah, I know. I just mean personally.
Oh, personally. you know what? I kind of feel like if I can run into some new places, that's fine. But I really, there's two places, Quezzo's Chicken and Waffles and Sister Pie, which I swear to you, I think about them almost daily.
Oh, Cuzzo's is awesome. I swear by that place.
So good.
That's
oh,
so
my God. You go often?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, if you can get a seat, because sometimes it gets a little crowded.
Yeah, I'd imagine. That place was so good. And the owner was amazing, and the staff in the back were just hilarious. Those guys were so great.
I gotta know, like, I just kind of want a hard pivot right now, because I have been reading your book. Actually, I just finished it. Your Dad Stole My Rake. And one thing, thank you, because this is the first book I ever got that has a congratulations for just turning the page. So, you know, I wasn't even thinking about that until, like, I read it, and it was like, congrats for reading, putting aside, you know, finding the time to read. And I thought that was pretty cool. So now, like, it made it more motivating to read the book. But that book is truly about your family and friends in the book, but I like it because I got people like that in my inner circle. Did you find that start resonating with a lot of people?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why I wrote the book. Whenever I would be doing my stand-up and people would come up and they would say, you know, I talk a lot about family in my stand-up, they would always say that, are you listening? Like, how did you get in my bedroom? How do you know my husband? Or how do you know everything about my wife? And I realized, oh, I'm talking about more than just my family. This is resonating with everybody. We're actually so much more alike than we are different. It's pretty crazy. So that's what I even say in the beginning of the book. I said, this really is a book about all of you and your people and your family. I always try and live like an independent life and try and not always follow the herd and do my own thing. But man, it doesn't matter how hard you try and be different, we are so much alike.
Oh man.
It's like, if you tell me stuff about your kids or your family or your mom and dad or your wife or whatever, I would know exactly what you're talking about. We all go through the exact same thing.
Now, one thing that the book kind of threw me for a loop is it gave me a little insight to you. I mean, every time I see you, whether it be acting, as a comedian, you give like this wholesome family guy smiley image. But in the book, it shows like you kind of got a bit of a mean streak. You've been a hero at times. For some reason, you were a deadhead. And can you tell me a little bit about Flintstone?
Flintstone was a kid in my school. I was talking about, I forget the name of the essay, I think it was School Sucks, and I think I was talking about how you want to protect your children from the meanness of the world, but you can't protect them from other children. And kids on kids, they just find any weakness you have and they just exploit it. And they let you have it. And there was a kid in my class who was actually a friend of mine who had a head exactly like Fred Flintstone. and everybody just called this guy Flintstone. And I know, like, to this day, even if people aren't in his office calling him Flintstone, he's looking in the mirror and thinking, man, I'm still Flintstone. Because that stuff sticks. And, you know, when I went around just doing my book tour, I had a kid came up, a man came up, and he was a kid in my school, and he actually said that I was one of the nicest guys to him, and he had this wandering eye kind of a thing, and people used to tease him, and he was new to the school, and I don't even remember this, but I took him under my wing, and I told the other kids to back off. I always had kind of an affection for the little guys, the ones who were always getting picked on, and so it was cool that this guy came and even you pointed out the same chapter where kids are just getting abused, and he was like, no man, you were actually one of the nice ones while I was being abused. I was like, all right.
Oh man,
that makes me feel pretty good.
One thing, I kind of want to jump around. I mean, like I said, you have a lot, and a lot of your work throughout your career has kind of like some way been somewhere in the zeitgeist of my family or myself. And I just kind of want to jump around your career a bit, because one thing that you used to do, I know it is not your call necessarily, but Marriage Ref. That is one of the one things me and my family used to sit around and watch every Sunday. No one had the same opinion, but for 30 to an hour, depending on the episode, we will all shut up. I gotta know, when you talk about like more alike than differences, that came in my mind, that because that really brought our family together, watching someone go through an argument. I'm pretty sure that comes up today.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's a shame that show didn't continue. There were some problems with the network and the producers. They were always fighting and stuff, so I think that they kind of took the love away from it. But when I tour, people always come up still to this day and bring up that show. They really miss it, because the whole goal of that show, you know, I was the marriage ref, and I would be brought in to solve your marital fights. the idea being that when you're in a marriage and you fight, no one's ever going to be the winner. So you have to bring in this guy, this marriage rep from the outside. He'll finally end the argument once and for all. So many people, married people, loved it because it just showed everything that we argue about. Nothing like big and divorce consequential. This was like the guy with too many throw pillows on his bed, or no one would clean the cat litter. Stuff like that, like little stuff. But man, it really resonated with married couples. And since that show's been off the air, there's nothing really real life for married close couples to to have a fun time with and kind of tackle real problems, but also have a real laugh with it. And it makes you feel like you're less alone. And I always play around the idea of bringing back another version of that, because I can tell you, you can tell from the people's reactions when I'm on tour that nothing's filled that void yet.
Man, I know I need one in my marriage. I mean, like, I would love a ref just to kind of like... Just to kind of like help. Maybe I was wrong on this one, but I kind of need another set of eyes on this. You were in one of my favorite movies, Before the Candelabra. You played Ray Arnett. I gotta know, did you meet the Ray Arnett, the real Ray Arnett, or did you just kind of go by what you read? Because you locked down that character to what we think we know from books and documentaries and such.
No, I never met him. The Steven Soderbergh, the director, met him, and he told me a little bit about him. I actually didn't want to meet him. I just wanted to kind of do what I thought was this guy's kind of essence, and apparently I nailed it. But I never actually got a chance to meet him. I was so lucky to be a part of that movie, though. That was really a good one.
Like, right now, I know I'm jumping around a lot, but you're doing live from here. I got to know, how were you asked to do that? And did the person who asked you, is a two-part question, did they ever listen to your show, Come to Papa? Because it's almost a dead ringer for it.
Yeah, well, that's why they came to get me. I always loved Prairie Home Companion, and I really love Garrison Keillor. I think he's one of the greatest, most prolific writers that we've had, and I always loved that show. But I always thought, as a kid, what would Prairie Home be like if it was in the hands of comedians instead of, you know, folk groups and things like that? So I started Come to Papa as my version of Prairie Home Companion, where I would have different comedians. We'd have some music, but mostly it was stand-up comedians and sketches and funny monologues and stuff.
Okay.
And so I had been writing sketches and doing everything that they wanted me to do on Live From Here, which was Prairie Home Companion at the time, when they came and started talking to me. Chris Thiele was the new host. Garrison had moved on. And they needed somebody to deal with the spoken word, because Chris is this amazing musician, but they didn't have someone that could write like in the same vein that Garrison was doing. So when they came and asked me if I would be interested in it, I was like, you don't understand. I've been training for this job for the last 5 years. So it was just like this real natural fit. And to be able to do a monologue, I do this monologue on there called Out in America. And the first time I was able to stand at the Fitzgerald Theater and just do my monologue, which I don't pretend that it's the news from Lake Wobegon that Garrett's been doing for 30 years, but just that I had a crack at doing my little version of it in the same place where he had done that legendary show was kind of a highlight. It's like one of those things in your career where you're like, wow, how did I get here? This is a cool little path, and I really felt like I had accomplished something.
All right, and like just over your career, I know you say you've been training for this with Come to Papa, but over this career, you've like developed a reputation as being just a standout MC, whether that just be as a comic, on variety shows. Does that translate at home? Are these unique skills to being a good host? Do you bring that type of energy when you come home and you're just like Mr., I don't know, good housekeeping or good MC?
I think I've never had that question asked that way before, but I think you're right. I love hosting at my house. We're always inviting people over. I love to cook and of course bake the bread. Always, like, my house is always the place where all of our friends kind of get together. And even with my wife and kids, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, I'm more like a little bit of an orchestrator than I am like really the disciplinarian or anything else. I just kind of like, I like when things, I have a sense of people and energy, and I like to keep things positive and moving along in a good direction. So, I probably fail a lot of times when I'm home. I still, that is my role.
Well, one thing I've seen that role show up on SiriusXM with What a Joke with Fortune Feimster. First of all, I love that show, and be honest with us right now. Is that just an elaborate way to hang out with Fortune and your friends? Because your connection is so strong. I gotta know. Is that just a quick way just to hang with people you love?
Yeah, I think that's why they asked me to do it. I think they knew that I know and have great relationships with so many comedians. I mean, I know all these people. Like, very rarely does someone show up who I don't know. And the coolest part about it, and I had this a little when I was doing Come to Papa as an interview show, you realize when you're with somebody, and you know this from doing your show, you can know somebody really well in your life, but it's not until you start interviewing them that you actually ask the questions that you would never ask in real life. So, like, I could be really tight with Jim Gaffigan or Seinfeld, but it's not until we're sitting there and they're across from me with the microphone that I could actually ask, like, what were you feeling when that show went off the air? Like, real in-depth questions, which you don't really ask when you're hanging out. So I think Netflix was pretty smart in asking me to do it just because of that, because they knew that comedians would show up and they'd be willing to play. And then I'll take the credit and say that I was pretty smart in asking Fortune to be my co-host, because that was purely instinct. We knew each other a little bit. Like, we'd run into each other and we just had a blast whenever we saw each other, but in short little doses, like on a flight or backstage or a show. But I just knew, you know, the whole key when you're working with someone like that and you're trying to do a show where you're funny is, you want to know that they draw the funny out in you. You want to be, some people you get around and your humor just kind of fades away. But with Fortune, I knew I could get with her. We don't even need guests. We could just hang out and talk for 2 hours by ourselves and it'll go every day. And I was right on that one for sure. She's amazing and we have a blast together.
Hey, and quite honestly, I see that connection, and kind of piggyback on what you just said, that, yeah, you do get that direct answer, and, you know, when you're with a microphone in front of someone. And you know what? I wasn't going to ask this question, but since you kind of sort of brought it up, other than a kick-ass name, Come to Papa, when the actual sitcom of Come to Papa ended, what did you take away? What did you learn? Because after that, you just became a wrecking ball of a comedian. You became Mr. MC that we were talking about before. So I got to know, that was kind of like a blessing in disguise, right?
In a way. I mean, you know, look, I would have loved for that show. That was my first sitcom I ever did, and I would have loved for it to be a hit show for 9 years. That would have been great, and I would have been very wealthy. But you know, it happened so early in my career, I wasn't even really prepared for it. And so I was kind of naive about it. So when it went away, I didn't, I, it stung. We only did 4 episodes of it, and it stung when they canceled it that I quickly realized they can take that stuff away. You cannot cast me in a movie or you can kill my sitcom, but you can't stop me from being a stand-up comedian. And within a month from my being canceled, I was driving back onto NBC's lot and doing The Tonight Show. And I was, that really showed me, if I work really hard at being a great stand-up, they can't stop this part of me. So NBC cancels my TV show, fine. But NBC is still paying me to show up at The Tonight Show because my stand-up is valuable, and that stand-up is valuable only because I dedicate all my time and energy into it and try and be as great as I possibly can. And so, yeah, it was a bit of a blast. It made me realize, don't ever leave the stand-up behind, because that is the one thing in show business that is totally in my control.
That makes sense. And this is my last question. Once again, you're going to be here at the Majestic Theater in Detroit doing stand-up. But one thing I'm very curious about, especially with any stand-up that has their hand in multiple projects like yourself, can you kind of sort of tell where your audience is coming from at the shows? You're like, oh, you're baked people, or you're live from here people, or you remember me from this movie. Can you just, without talking to them, can you kind of pick and choose, like, oh, I know where this person knows me from?
A little bit. You know, I've been a regular on Joe Rogan's podcast, and those guys are really easy to pick out. I have this weird thing, like, you'll see if you come to the theater, there's like a mix of NPR people that come, and, you know, that group is, you know, more middle-aged, more family, couples, that kind of thing. And then they've got the Rogan guys, who are dudes with beards. And then I've got some baked fans who you can tell that they like to eat. and then some Rob Zombie fans who, you know, because I did a couple projects with him, so those guys show up, they're always a little covered in tattoos. And it's kind of cool that you have like this stretch of audiences, but there's a common denominator with all of them. Like, they all kind of are cool people. They all just like having a good time. Family's important to them, and they kind of like, that's the thing that kind of unites them all. But from first glance, I can pretty much tell what they've seen me in.
Oh, that's cool. Do like the baked people smell like bread, or they bring bread to you or something?
That's, oh yeah, those are the best ones.
Oh really? I was just joking. Seriously.
No, for real. They show up whenever I'll come. Almost every show I do, there's some baked good backstage. People bring me pies and cookies or bread that they made or bread that they bought from their favorite bakery. Yeah, that's one of the blessings and the curses of doing that bake show.
Well, you always got a free meal, sort of.
Yeah, but I'm also getting fat.
That's why you got to hang with the Rogan guys. Get that off you. See, it all works full circle.
Yeah, it's good. I'll take it.
Well, Tom, I know you only got us for a few minutes. We're going to get off here. I just want to say thank you. I look forward to seeing you when you're here on the 1st at the Majestic, and just much success, my friend.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the support. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you too, Tom. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.